and welcome to the hearing. I'm John.
And from Chicago's North Side, I'm Scotto.
And without any further ado, on to this week's album, which is from 1961, Jerry Lee's Greatest by Jerry Lee Lewis. This is our Jerry Lee Lewis tribute episode. And this is not a compilation, despite the title.
Right. I was very confused. I mean, it kind of is a compilation, but it's not.
Well, any album around this time was a compilation because it was a very singles-driven music economy. So,
and then once you had enough singles out, then you put out an album, mm-hmm. some new stuff, some singles mixed in together to try to get people to buy something big.
Kind of like they do now.
Yeah, I guess so.
What goes around comes around. Well, a circle, blah, blah. Anyway. Yeah. Jerry Lewis was an American singer-songwriter and pianist from Pianist, known for his showmanship, his incendiary piano playing, and his controversial marriage to his much younger cousin. Lewis was nicknamed the Killer and described as rock and roll's first great wild man. Jerry Lee's Greatest is his second studio album. Hell of a name for his second album. it was released in December of 1961 by Sun Records, produced by Sam Phillips, and features Jerry Lee Lewis on vocals and piano. And I could not find any listing of the session players anywhere.
Oh, yeah. You know, I didn't see that either. You're right.
And I looked, because I would love to know who the horn players are, because I love that horn section.
Yeah.
Speaking of, track one, Money. The horns on this are fucking brilliant.
It's like, way ahead of its time.
Oh, yeah.
This is 61?
And I've always thought of this as a Beatles song.
It's, like, everything on this album, it's old, you know? Yeah. There's stuff that, some of this stuff dates back 100 years, you know?
It was first recorded in 59. This Jerry Lee Lewis version predates the Beatles version.
Yeah, the Beatles recovering, you know.
Great piano solo. I think the ending goes on a bit long, but I like that high background harmony at the end.
This, I mean, man, it's like a big band jazz thing with these giant singers, and it starts to go gospel towards the end. It just really... It kind of sounds like late 60s pop more than something from 61, though.
And those horns, they were really going for it. Because horn sections can sound a little staid.
Yeah.
But these guys were really putting everything into it. I loved that.
But think of that whole go-go sound from the late 60s with the horns and everything. And here he's doing it for this.
Track two, As Long As I Live. Loved the opening piano part. Nice soft vocal, which is not something you normally think of from Jerry Lee. Great lead guitar tone. I like how the bass kind of punctuates it. And I like how it picks up during the solo.
And I'm starting to get, as I get into this, you know, just how eclectic he is, you know? And it's, I guess it wasn't something I was expecting. I was expecting more of just like the country rock kind of thing, but you get this like straightforward pop with this country twang in it. And then you kind of pick up this rock sound also with that lead.
And whenever we go back this far, I have to remind myself of what pop music was at the time.
Right, right. It's and rock. I mean, it's just such a different animal than what we're used to from
early years, first few years of rock and roll. I have to remember how different and how aggressive it was compared to what was popular in the day.
Right. And I would honestly say, though, I don't think he was the first wild man. I would say the Big Bopper was kind of just fucking like, I mean, I was listening to one of his songs while we were waiting for you to come on. And it's like, it's almost like a Sex Pistols song, the way he's just singing. Oh, yeah. It was like White Lightning, where he's just singing about moonshine and shit.
Oh, go into some old blues. It gets interesting. I mean, Zeppelin borrowed some choice lyrics, let's be real. The whole Lemon song was basically a cover.
Well, sure, there's that. But, I mean, there's just the whole rough vocal that the Bopper did. Jerry Lee, on the other hand, is so smooth, you know. He's wild, but there's a smoothness to it. And as we pick up, he apes a lot of other singers. But speaking of Led Zeppelin, if I remember right, this was the one where you could definitely hear like they
Oh, yeah.
took like rock and roll from,
Yeah.
know.
But you mentioned Sex Pistols.
Yeah.
The early rock and rollers were as transgressive as the punks were
Yeah.
in their respective time. And we tend to forget that. It sounds like, very innocent music, but at the time it was absolutely not.
Well, like, Buddy Holly's all, he looks like this nerd just dressed up, but I mean, the music is just fucking aggressive.
I'm a low-key Buddy Holly fan.
Yeah.
The man was a fucking genius, way ahead of his
Yeah.
time.
Oh, yeah.
Back to the album, track three, Hillbilly Fever. Great opening drum break. I like the sort of fiddly guitar parts. Classic piano solo, typical Buddy, or keep wanting to say Buddy Lee, Jerry Lee.
Or
Like the
just call him
distortion.
Killer. Or just call him
Killer,
Killer.
yeah. Like the distortion in his voice in the third verse. Nice to hear a guitar solo finally.
Yeah.
And I like how the drums pick up after the solo.
And this one's a lot more country. Probably the most country he gets on it. The fade out, entirely too long, though. And kind of awkward.
Track four, Breakup. Great opening piano riff, great guitar tone, great groove. I like the rapid fire piano chords. I have a little bit of experience on a keyboard, and hearing someone play that fast amazes me.
Oh yeah, I mean, second to none. Just the way he would just on a piano, not keyboards, but a piano. Singing, of course. Here, there were times on the or point of the album where I thought he was kind of trying to sound like Elvis, but this one it feels like he's straight up lampooning him. I feel like you can hear he's doing the snarl.
A little bit, yeah. He doesn't really go Elvis for me until a later song, but
Oh, I thought this was the most Elvis, actually.
no, for me it's
He
a later one.
really does a few like quotes. There's other singers he quotes too, which is interesting. And that's in the next one.
Track five, Hello, Hello, Baby. This is my pick for favorite. I have to pick the blues song.
Yeah, he's straight up blues here.
Love the groove on this one. It's a great spot for kind of mid-tempo blues song, which I would not expect from Jerry Lee.
I think the flow of the original album is better than the Spotify version. I think they just make more sense because it kind of goes from like there's songs with tinges of blues that go into this one, and a lot of the stuff that Spotify had just didn't make any sense. But here you hear that, "Hello, baby."
The big
He's
bopper
obviously,
reference.
yeah, I mean, that's a Big Bopper reference. I mean, at this point, he's the late Big Bopper. Hopper, of course. And there's even a little Roy Orbison that,
Oh, yeah. Good point.
But yeah, I like this one a lot too.
But yeah, I love that vocal distortion. I love how present the bass is and all the fast parts in the piano solo. Track six, Home. Great guitar tone. Love how smooth that guitar riff is. Have to call out the line, I never took a wife. This might have been before. No, actually, no, this was not
No.
before
No.
because this album was delayed. Sam Phillips would not release it. I think Sam Phillips wished that he had never taken a wife because this
All
album
right.
was pushed back due to that whole controversy. For those who don't know, he was in his early 20s, he married his 13-year-old second cousin.
Kind of torpedoed his career. Well, not really torpedoed. He wasn't canceled because obviously here he is, still producing.
This is the album with Great Balls of Fire, so.
Right, and weird that they left that off the first album for some reason. This is a very much like an Elvis song too, of course, but it's interesting just how meaningless genres are, because he just goes, from country to pop to rock. There's jazz in this, there's blues, and this one leads into that blues song, like on the like they're reversed on the other on the original recording.
Genre was a marketing tool.
Kind of, yeah.
That's the only reason there are musical genres. So record companies could target their music to specific audiences. Genre is bullshit.
That makes sense. You just don't expect them to be as eclectic as they are in this, though.
I tend to
It's
think of it.
surprising, you know?
I tend to think of it in terms of the three traditions, folk, formal, and pop.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of what each tradition values more so than specific genres. That doesn't make a lot of sense. Track seven, Let's Talk About Us. This is my pick for weakest. This is the one that just goes way too Elvis for me.
It's like a toned down version of Money. It's a lot less gospel, a lot more pop. There's definitely a Don't Be Cruel. This is the one I was thinking of, Big Bopper's White Lightning too, because it's a very 50s kind of dated sound. But I'm still into it. It's
I like the background vocals, got a good groove, great vocal in the chorus, and he really commits to that talk thing in the second half of the chorus.
yeah.
Track eight, Great Balls of Fire. Did you pick a favorite yet?
Not yet.
Are you gonna be a coward?
No.
Okay, wow. Neither of us took the coward's way out this weekend. I'm
No.
surprised.
And I mean, you could. This is, of course, an iconic piece. You know,
Classic for a reason.
it is ridiculous that this is only 1 minute and 50 seconds. It feels like a 20-minute Prague song almost, but it's just 1 minute 50. Why is it so loved? I mean, there's the whole starts and stops, which I think is a very unique feel for the time. I'm saying for the time, though. For now, it's kind of like a, does it really work? And then the lyrical content, it's this strange, S&M vibe going on, where there's mix of pain and pleasure that must have really confused the fuck out of some people back in the
That
day.
stop and start riff that he uses in the verse, da 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 da,
Yeah.
and sing, that's a blues riff. He just sped it the fuck up.
Right.
He just basically did a punk version of a
Was
classic
just gonna
blues
say,
riff of the
that's a
time.
very punk rock thing to do. But breaking, his will equaling to be a thrill. It's in the end, it's about losing control and losing one's mind, which is what they were going for back then. However, lyrically, it's really fucking awkward, like chewing my nails and twitching my thumbs or whatever. It's just, I know. So that is why I'm not picking it for strongest. But it's still, of course, a great song.
The vocal was exceptionally well recorded for its time. It's got some great delay on it.
Yeah.
Love the snare sound. But yeah,
Now,
it's just fun.
if we were talking about a whole lot of shaking going on, that, of course, I would not be able to resist that song. That is my favorite Jerry Lee Lewis song of all time.
Maybe I should have picked a different album. This is that Great Balls of Fire is his iconic song, so that's
It
why I
is.
picked this
It
song.
is. But a whole lot of shaking going on just sounds like it's a fucking. It just builds into this like intense, almost to like a riot in the end, you know?
That is what rock and roll took from the blues.
Yeah.
It's that raucous. We talked about this with Muddy a few weeks ago. It's that raucous, aggressive blue, thing that the blues did so well that I don't think a lot of people know. People
Yeah.
think of, smoother blues artists when they think of the blues, but it got intense, and rock and roll definitely took that. It's
And it's
that's
the
the
thing
rock.
with the killer here. He's intense, he's wild, but he's really smooth at the same time. He's like, oh, he's part of what was known as the Million Dollar Quartet, him, Perkins and Cash and Elvis, and he's kind of all of them rolled up in one almost.
And speaking of Perkins, we gotta get to him one day because he was another fucking genius.
Yeah.
He wrote for pretty much everybody back then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. And oh, that Great Balls of Fire. That's Otis Blackwell, who wrote most of Elvis's, or not most of Elvis, a bunch of Elvis's hits. Don't Be Cruel, and Return to Sender, and I think All Shook Up as well.
It was still very much a pop tradition engine driving this kind of music.
Yeah.
It was about the performance and the entertainment, not about the authenticity. So you have a lot of guest songwriters like you do in modern pop music.
Yeah.
Track nine, Frankie and Johnny. Like the groove on this one. Good guitar tone. Nice to hear a second guitar. I could hear, the rhythm guitar now and then.
Is this my pick for strongest? This is a traditional song, dates back to like I think the 1890s. I think somebody put it to record finally in like the 19 teens.
This was in a blues guitar book that my father bought when I first started playing, along with Midnight Special. And I think they both date back to around the same time.
Ah, I fucking love Creedence's Midnight Special. That's my favorite Creedence song. Nice. but this, people tell the story differently. Like Johnny Cash did a version of this the same year, but his is so much cleaner, where like the guy goes out and he's still being faithful, and then he sees a girl and, you know, he goes up to hit on her, and but it turns out to be his wife's sister that he somehow didn't recognize, and she, you know, catches him, and, you know, but it's a happy ending in the end. Not this.
No. This goes very Hey Joe.
And that's kind of traditionally the other way around how the story goes, where, you know, the woman, the scorned woman, mm-hmm. kills the guy, yeah. and he's not shaming the girl for doing it either. No.
And this was probably the original version. I'm willing to bet that.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think he's faithful to the original version more than everybody else, I would say.
Yeah.
Because it usually does involve the guy getting killed.
Right. I think this is maybe the best vocal on the album. He really cuts loose in the third verse.
He really can tell a story. I mean, of course, Cash can too. But Cash decided to go clean with this.
Yeah. Which is weird for Cash.
Right. Which also, more on going clean later in the album.
And to put Cash in perspective, for country and at his time when he started, he was practically metal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. He's
he
badass.
Was the Black Sabbath of his time.
Right.
Track 10, Cold, Cold Heart. This reminds me of that horrible Elton John song.
He's very faithful to Hank Williams' vocals here. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, no kidding, it's a Hank Williams song.
Yeah.
He's pretty much singing it like him.
Right.
He really took the vocal chameleon kind of thing, which I don't know if many people did back in the day.
No. This kind of put Jerry Lee Lewis in perspective for me as an artist, because I get what he does. He was kind of that second tier, kind of just fills any niche they need him for kind of guy.
Yeah.
He didn't have that real strong identity like Elvis or Little Richard.
Well, if he hadn't slept or, you know, married a 13-year-old, he probably would have. I mean, there are people that believe he would have been just as big as Elvis, or close to it at least.
But Elvis, be it you know, a creation or not, had that very, very clear identity.
I also feel, you know, Elvis, I mean, I feel it's a bit more monotonous, you know?
Certainly. I think Jerry Lee is better as an artist.
Elvis did go out and do some gospel and some country too, but I feel he kind of stayed in his lane more, and Jerry Lee, you know, branched out more.
He was a very talented performer. He just maybe didn't, or his people maybe just didn't make the best creative choices.
Marrying his 13-year-old cousin was
not Elvis,
creative choice.
Which his marriage is also problematic in that sense, in a similar sense. As a New Jerseyan, I'm being very careful not to make not to cast aspersions about the South, but Cold, Cold Heart, nice groove. Like the opening piano part, nice place for another slower song. Like the kind of countryish background vocals. His voice is nice and clear on this one. And I love the counterpoint in the solo. Each hand is doing something very different. He was a hell of a player.
Yeah, that's also the big difference between him and Elvis. Oh, yeah.
He was a musician.
He's a top-notch musician. There's nothing arguing about that.
I mean, Elvis did play guitar.
I mean, yeah, kind of.
And he was actually a decent bass player. There was... I can't remember the name of the song, but he did play bass on one song, and he was actually really good. And there's a famous picture of him with a bass. I think he probably preferred it. It kind of fits him better because he was very rhythmic.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Maybe I Don't Care. That was the song he played bass on, because they got a bass guitar finally in the studio, and his bassist was an upright guy and wasn't comfortable with the bass guitar, so Elvis just tracked the bass part. Track 11, what did I say?
This is my pick for weakest.
I fucking love this song, but it was better left to Ray Charles, who wrote it
and I mean,
is iconic with it.
I would say there, you know, there's only a few people that could get away with doing a Ray Charles cover, and I thought the killer would be one of those guys.
Yeah.
But he goes like totally whitewashed and clean here.
Who do you think could get away with a Ray Charles cover? Because I can't think of anybody.
I think like Little Richard.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. If Little Richard had taken a shot at this, he definitely could have done
maybe,
better.
Maybe James Brown.
Interesting. Okay.
Probably Otis.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
Otis probably did cover him, too.
Yeah.
But we knew what Ray Charles was saying. But this was like watching a dubbed movie on network television. Yeah, this is what happens when you find a stranger in the Alps.
There's that. What was that song that? Actually, I'm gonna change gears here.
What?
This reminds me. I was gonna say there's this old 50s song that Pat Boone covered famously.
It is very much Pat Boone territory.
But I'm changing gears. I'm gonna say this reminds me of his metal album. Pat Boone did a metal album. It was hilarious.
Oh yeah. Only this, you know, was done in earnest. You know, this is the same feeling I had when I listened to Johnny Cash's version of Frankie and Johnny, where it's all gosh shucks, you know. But Pat Boone did Crazy Train. My favorite of that album was probably Holy Diver.
Yeah,
it's just like, what the fuck?
But Boone is winking the whole time. There's no wink here.
Right. But I just don't get the point of it. I mean, was he thinking it was good for a single? Was what he was going for here?
I suspect it was just he liked the song and wanted to cover it.
Well, yeah, but you would think, and you know,
Sam Phillips wasn't like, yeah, maybe no. as the producer, he should have been like, yeah, it's a great song, but maybe not for you.
You know, send them to Arkansas. Like, what? I mean, none of that. I mean, you could tell that was his own addition to it, kind of. But, you know, the big part of Ray Charles, of course, is the grunting and the moaning.
Yeah. You know what he's saying, as you said earlier.
Yeah, you know what he's saying. And here it's like, what are you saying exactly here? Like, the dirtiest he gets is, like, the girl with the diamond ring and watch her as she shakes that thing. Uh-huh. But it's like, yeah. It's not quite Pat Boone territory, but it's too close for comfort to me. Yeah. There's no reason to do this.
Yeah, it's a fair call. I do love that riff, and that's all Ray Charles.
Of course,
that piano is brilliant.
Playing Ray Charles, I'm not going to question that at all. This, of course he can do that.
And the groove is brilliant. I like the percussive guitar. I thought it was a snare drum at first. I realized it was the guitar. I think the background vocals are maybe a little high in the mix. They kind of overshadow the lead a little bit. And finally, track 12, Hello Josephine. Nice groove. I like that percussive sax bit. Great vocal. Love the guitar stabs in the first part of the break. And I like that there's an entire verse of
It's a weird track to close an album with.
Yeah.
In fact, really, anything sounds weird after Great Balls of Fire, that should have been the final track of the album, because it just leaves you with those three piano notes, and that would have been it. But it's a strange, distant, echoey sax. Some really strange vocals. And it's kind of just this weird snapshot, you know. It's a Fats Domino song, and it's very similar to the original, except some of those weird vocals and things that he added to it. But yeah, it's just he knows this girl from the past, and then I guess he comes back to town, and she forgets where she's from, kind of thing, you know.
So, do you recommend it?
I do. It was really, it was a surprise. I, you know, Thought I was gonna get bored, honestly, but this is music my father listened to a lot, so it probably still does. He really took it hard, the loss I heard. So maybe this is one that he'll listen to, who knows?
Yeah, I definitely recommend it too. I was very surprised by how, like you said, how versatile he was, how
Yeah.
what a great piano player he was, because I thought he just kind of, beat on it, for
No, he,
show.
but that's one thing I expected, because he's, I mean, even if you saw like the movie in the 80s with Dennis Quaid, which is a terrible movie, but I mean, it's still that's him like singing and playing piano on
If only he'd made better romantic choices, he
it.
could have been much bigger.
Or kept it quiet.
Who's that?
Either one.
And that's it for Jerry Lee's Greatest. Until next time, when we'll be revealing Shields by Grizzly Bear. Until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.